It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, the coronavirus pandemic has reshaped our lives. It's weird. I keep waking up every day saying to myself, it's weird. I guess that weirdness will wear off and we'll have a new normal, or we'll go back to the way it was. I don't think so. Social distancing has meant, of course, for all of us, tremendous changes. It's meant shutting down all kinds of events and gatherings, sports, theaters, cinemas, closing churches. It's inspired online churches. It's closed stores. It's limited restaurants to take out only service here in Iowa. And many of us have been encouraged or required to work from home. Perhaps you are now a new at-home worker, making that transition, just as I am. In fact, you are listening to the very first edition of River to River that I am hosting entirely from my home. I have my tea, my chamomile tea next to me. I'm hoping my dog, Lucy, upstairs doesn't get too excited by something she sees outside the window and barks. We'll see. That may happen. Up to now, working from home, commonly called teleworking, has been a benefit. Has been a benefit available to just a handful of us. Only 7% of workers in private industry in the U.S., that's roughly 10 million of the nation's approximately 140 million workers in private industry, have access to flexible workspace benefit or telework. That's according to a 2019 survey from the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. And before the COVID epidemic, those workers who have had access to teleworking have been, for the most part, managers, other white-collar professionals as well, mostly affluent people. This hour, I have two guests joining me remotely to discuss working from home. They each have a specific take on this area that springs from their research, and both are assistant professors at the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business. Welcome to Michelle Williams and Daniel Newton. Michelle and Daniel, welcome to this program.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you, Ben. Happy to be here.
And this is interesting. Are you both in your homes as well?
Yes, we are.
Is this a little freaky for you, or are you used to this?
I think we usually do a lot of our research from our home, but we're not used to doing all of our teaching and media and interviews and things like that from home. So that's a new phase for us.
Okay. And Daniel?
I agree with Michelle. And I mean, the other thing that's new for us is the lack of coworkers or different coworkers now, right? So my family's my coworker, as opposed to walking down the hall and seeing Michelle or someone else.
Okay. Well, in just a moment, I wanted to get into more specifics with you of the benefits and challenges of working from home and share some of the social media responses we got from IPR listeners about from people who are newly at-home workers. But let's start off, if I could ask each of you to tell us a little bit about the focus of your work. Michelle, let's start with you. You work on what?
I am sorry. That's my doorbell.
That's all right. That happens.
I'll go get it and come back.
Okay. Come on back.
Or should I just wait? My daughter's getting it.
Okay. She is. We're fine. This is what working this. I'm glad that happened, actually, Michelle, because this is what people, millions of people around the country are experiencing, right? They transfer their work to home and then the doorbell rings or the dog barks or the 5-year-old wants something, right?
Exactly.
Let's go back to your work. You work on trust between management and workers. Tell us a little bit more about what you do and your focus.
Oh, certainly. So I am particularly interested in trust and collaboration that occurs across boundaries. So usually I am looking at trust between workers from different organizations, like consultants and clients or buyers and suppliers, also from different organizations in terms of healthcare, like you might have a hospital collaborating with a nursing home for care of patients. What's really interesting now is that the boundary is people's homes, right? So they're working across boundaries. So I'm particularly interested in the really skilled interpersonal behaviors that people use to build trust. A lot of times in the trust research, we think of trust as, oh, well, someone's has high ability, they are benevolent, they have integrity, and we just watch them to see them reveal these qualities or characteristics. But in the real world, people are working together and they're negotiating, that they're figuring out together what would someone else feel is trustworthy? How do I make this relationship work? So I look at what are people do to really build that relationship, things like perspective taking, looking at things from other people's point of view, things like emotion management, trying to reduce the threats that other people might see in this relationship. And I started with trust building, and now I also look at trust repair. And particularly nowadays with people working from home, that idea of there's glitches, things, people don't always meet our expectations, and now there are millions of reasons why that might not happen. Technology might fail, there might be a knowledge gap in using the technology, and really, how do people work with it, with interpersonal problem solving, to really build and strengthen that relationship that they when they have to do it from a distance.
Right. Oh, this will be fascinating to talk about in depth in a few more minutes. But let's go to Daniel. You have been working on. You've got a grant. You've been working on a grant from NASA, and this involves the International Space Station. Tell us what you've been doing.
Yeah, so I study with NASA specifically how crew members stay engaged. So we all have these motivational states, and how do we stay engaged as we switch from one thing to the next? And with NASA, that's something that I've studied in various habitats. So in an isolated habitat in Houston, called the Human Exploration Research Analog, which is a tight space where crews live for 30 to 45 days. I did a study last year in Russia for 4 months in like the Mars training facility with cosmonauts or aspiring cosmonauts. And then kind of the focal place where I've done research with NASA is in kind of in outer space on the International Space Station with 6 different crew members there. And so in each of these different spaces, looking at where individuals are isolated for kind of short to longer term periods, up to a year, how do individuals stay engaged and manage themselves? And then kind of broader beyond that, I also study how people speak up at work, how people feel heard, right? And kind of how those interpersonal connections stay live to make sure that people are expressing themselves effectively and others are hearing them to kind of optimize organizational performance.
Interesting. Daniel, we are, well, let's just start off right there, because you've studied, how many people are typically on the International Space Station? 5 or 6?
Yeah. Yep. That's right.
Okay. So this is a different work environment, but what do you see there when listeners are taking in this conversation and saying, yeah, but I work from home. I just changed my work environment. How does your research there transfer to the newness that people may be feeling in transferring their work from an office or somewhere else to their home?
That's a good question, because this space is very different from kind of many of our kind of working environments now, where we're kind of in our houses. But one thing that crew members said over and over and over again when I debriefed with them when they came back from space was the importance of social support. So we've heard a lot about social distancing, and we're physically distant from each other now, maybe more than ever, but that doesn't mean that we can't maintain our social connections with others. And so crew members talked about the importance of relying on each other if they had a bad day, for example, or maybe one of them mentioned that she was frustrated if mission control didn't hear her. And so we all have people, hopefully, that we can tap into, a friend, a loved one, a cherished family member that we can say, hey, hear me out. Let's jump on a Skype call or text or FaceTime, to something to maintain those social bonds. But not just relying on others, I think crew members would say, is important, but also reaching out and offering help to others, showing that you're available, that you're accessible. And that can not only benefit others by helping other people manage their stress and cope effectively, but that can also be something that helps you manage your stress and your own well-being. So there's lots of research on the benefits of helping others at work or in general. And so I think these are things that are very transferable from the International Space Station to our kind of at-home virtual environments today.
Right. One of the differences I'm sure you thought of that springs to mind for me, Daniel, is when you're one of five or six crew members on the International Space Station, you are all on, in the big picture, on the same mission, right? When I am working at my home, or Michelle is at her home, or you're at your home, the other crew members, let's just call them that, in your in your home are on different missions than you, probably, right? So that's a little bit of a different twist.
Yeah, that is. And that could be difficult to kind of synchronize things, right? To make sure that you're staying on the same page. And so I think it's probably also healthy to lower our expectations to some degree, right? To not try to meet all the mission goals that we would have previously, but to kind of, in order to manage and cope, just kind of dial down expectations so we can work more synchronously with others effectively.
Well, if you've just joined us, my guests this hour are Daniel Newton and Michelle Williams. They're both assistant professors of management and entrepreneurship at the University of Iowa Tippey College of Business. They have two very specific research slants on working at home. At least that's what we're using it for today. I am at home. This is the first River to River that's been recorded entirely at my home. Michelle is at her home. Daniel is at his home. And so we're getting used to the fact that a lot of us are, because of the COVID epidemic, having to work at home. And it's a new environment. So we want to explore how it may be different. And in just a few minutes, I want to share some really interesting social media responses we had over the weekend, Daniel and Michelle. We had people rank from 1 to 10 how they're feeling about working from home, those that do have work from home. And we got the whole gamut. But before we go there, Michelle, I want to find out more about your research and into trust and collaboration between teams, team members, how you see that having a bearing on what we can learn from it as new workers at home.
Great. I'd love to share that. One of the things that when I do workshops with teams across the country, one of the things that I find, I usually give them a scenario, and there'll be three different coworkers that they could hire into their team. And one is kind of a little low in competence, one is low in integrity, so they lie a little bit, and one is low in benevolence, so they're not the most friendly, don't go out to lunch. Inevitably, people will choose the person who's low in benevolence because they're high in competence and they're high in integrity, and think, well, that's not as important in a work environment. But when we move into an environment where people are working at home, where you can't see them, where all different kinds of things, health issues and family issues can be going on in their lives, benevolence starts to rise in the importance of a factor that your manager has and your coworker has. And so a lot of what I look at is, what are the kinds of threats that you can have to a trusting relationship? One of the ways that work is changing is that managers have to trust their employees. They can't see them, they can't monitor them, they can't stop in on them as frequently. They have to trust that their employees will come to them when they run into a problem or a glitch, and they have to trust that they're doing everything that they need to do to make that organization go forward. And employees, interesting, not only have to trust their managers to give them all the resources they need to work at home, but they also have to trust themselves, right? They have to trust that even if they have to take a break to help their child with math, or they're having lunch with their family instead of with coworkers, that they are still a valuable employee. So Daniel mentioned the idea of kind of giving people giving themselves a little bit of a break in how they think of themselves as a worker, as a manager. One of the things we talk about in trust is really, we use a word in psychology called attribution, but it's really the assumptions you make about yourself, right? If you're at work and you're working in your office, if you went home for lunch, you might make an assumption that you're not as committed, right? But when you're working at home, that assumption should be that you're actually doing something that benefits your well-being, your family's well-being, and makes you able to focus more at work. They actually find that people who have other commitments are more engaged when they're doing their work and do a great job. But people learning to reframe what a trustworthy employee means is going to be critical during this time.
So interesting. Michelle and Daniel, let's dig into some of these social media responses that we've had from Iowa Public Radio listeners prior to this conversation. We on Facebook and also on Twitter over the weekend, we asked this question. If you've been working from home, how would you rate your experience? So you can give it a rating from 1 to 10, 1 being, it's been miserable. I can't wait to go back to the office. And 10 is, it's been great. I never want to go back to the office. And we asked our listeners to share their biggest challenges or triumphs. So the very unscientific poll that we took over the weekend, we had 28 responses. We had we didn't have any ones, but we had every other rating there. In fact, we had a couple over 10. We had a 15 rating. But here's just to start off with one of the lower ones, Dave from Twitter comments, he gave it a 3. He says, less productive, distracted. After 30 plus years, daily coworker casual interaction is a big part of the value of my job and a key source of creative thinking. So Dave gives it a 3. Let's scroll down to also on Twitter, Lindsay from, well, this is from Facebook. Lindsay says 10. I had no idea how productive I could be. The bonus is that at the end of the workday, I go straight to my yard for sunshine and fresh air. I feel liberated, Lindsay on Facebook. So Daniel, let's go to you. What do you hear in those two responses determining someone having a fairly miserable new at-home work experience compared to someone who says, this is the best?
I think they both make sense. I mean, so the first one talked about the value of routines, right, that are probably disruptive, and that's causing stress and kind of this negative response. And there is value to these informal workplace interactions. I mean, a thought kind of in response to that is there's still ways to kind of maintain those with just communication technologies today, whether it's instant messaging or others. And so the routines may have to be adapted, but I think that 3 could be enhanced. At least I think it could. The other one, I think her name was Lindsay.
Lindsay.
I mean, a lot that I was hearing in her response was the benefits of flexibility and autonomy. Of course, in a lot of ways, if there's less interruptions, that we're going to be focusing on the things that matter most in our jobs, right? And so we're going to be probably have more time to dedicate to those. And then we don't have a commute anymore, right? She said she can walk right outside and she's like, there's no commute, and she's immediately enjoying being outside. And so there's certainly benefits, the flexibility, the autonomy, more time with loved ones, or more time doing the things that you want to do, but then also probably more focused time to just hone in on those things at work that are going to be required to be an effective worker.
Mm-hmm. I guess in those 28 responses, I didn't tell you where the large majority of the responses landed. That was on 10. Of those 28 responses in our very unscientific social media poll over the weekend, 10 of the responses of the 28 were 10s. So these people, a lot of people are having a very good reaction, like Megan from Twitter. Well, I guess she gives it a 6. So she's a mixed bag. Here are hers. Pluses, I'm cooking at home way more and can spend way more quality time with my family. Minuses, says Megan, a 3-year-old in the mom watch this phase doesn't yet understand after this next conference call, sweetie. So another one, this is on Twitter from The Refuge Creative Arts. A 10 rating. This person on Twitter says, a few years ago, I started on a path to a new career, determined to go to college online while raising a family. I trained for a career that could be done remotely so I could stay living in rural Iowa. I graduated, got a great job, and here I am already prepared for this. So that was as if it was meant to be for the Refuge Creative Arts on Twitter. Your reaction to some of the listener reaction we're getting, Michelle?
Well, I'm seeing two different things. One thing that I'm seeing, I'm going to go back to Dave, is something that's pervasive in our society right now, loneliness. And it is something that not only impacts, you know, kind of our daily and emotional experience, but impacts our immune system. So I can see how Dave is responding that way. And like Daniel said, one of the most important things is building some of that community into his day, having a lunch break that's on Zoom or social media or text. I know that even in the school system throughout Iowa, they're having teachers have Zoom calls with their different classes so that the students can start to feel connected. Even in my teaching with college students, when they get on and they see each other and they can get back together and work with the group that they've been working with, it makes a huge difference. So work that may not normally be team-based work, so you don't have to meet with your team, but you have coworkers that you really care about and depend on. This is probably a job that could fall to managers. Managers are not having the same role anymore, and part of their role may be to kind of develop these spaces of compassion and holding spaces for their employees to get together and have some of the things that make them feel productive, not only having a schedule, but having these touch points with other people for the organization.
We've got about a minute before we go away. So I'm not sure if I'm hearing from you that I love the perspective switching from manager to the worker. Does the manager perhaps in the future in this work-at-home environment become less important?
So I'm thinking that in this role, they might become more important. They're a different type of touch point, right? So managers are teaching their employees different skills. They're teaching their employees how to negotiate and advocate for themselves and make sure that that employee comes to them. They might have open office hours, but the employee now has to come and ask. It's not that they stop by and say, hey, it looks like you need this, or, you know, what's going on here at the office cooler? They actually are starting to train a whole new set of skills in their employees, and then also facilitate those collaborative spaces for those employees or those social spaces, right?
Michelle,
they might have a virtual birthday party.
All right, Michelle and Daniel, we've got to go away for a few minutes. Fascinating to have you on board. You are at your homes. I am at my home, the First River to River, created entirely from a home environment. We're talking about working from home since so many of us have been thrust into that situation, the benefits and the challenges. And we'll be back in just a moment with Daniel Newton, Michelle Williams of the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's not only from Iowa Public Radio News today, but I am doing my first River to River from my home. Yes, I'm in my basement. My dog is upstairs. I've got my tea next to me. I've kind of retrofitted or refitted a basement room. I'm talking into a microphone. I have a laptop in front of me, a few other screens, and Michelle Williams is with us. She's at her home. Daniel Newton is at his home. They are both assistant professors of management and entrepreneurship at the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business, and they have some fascinating research and their insights sharing because so many more of us are working from home these days because of the COVID epidemic. Perhaps you're in that situation. Perhaps you responded to our social media plea from the weekend asking how you would rate working from home if you're a newbie. We'll share some of those responses a little bit later. But Daniel, I wanted to go back to some of your research and see how it fits into this. We talked about working with NASA astronauts on the International Space Station, but you also do research on, you've studied people at work, how they speak up. Translate that into this new world of working virtually with groups of people.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll try to build off some of the points that I made earlier, which is when I study people that speak up at work, there's implicitly two parties, right? Somebody that says something, and then you have a target that's listening to somebody's ideas, somebody's creative expressions. And I think that is so critical right now, where we all have these perspectives and we may feel like that there's not as many people to hear us out, right? And we all need to feel heard. There's benefits of feeling heard, where you feel that social support is critical to individuals' well-being. And so I would just, kind of something that I've seen in my research is the power of feeling heard, not only in creating more, I guess, supportive work environments, but helping people to do their jobs better. That if people have something that they need to say, that it's really good if others can kind of hear them out. And so that's something I think that we can all do, is be kind of listeners, that we can offer ourselves to others, to friends, to coworkers, to reach out and say, I'm here for you. That's something that I did with a coworker just a few days ago. I just said, hey, you've been on my mind. How's it going? And then he shared some things. And so it's not like I'm trying to be, I guess, a psychologist for a coworker, even though Michelle and I are trained as organizational psychologists. It's more just that we can all offer kind of a listening ear to others that's going to have these positive benefits for ours and their well-being.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, back to your research into trust and collaboration between teams. You also study this all this communication in business through the lens of gender. What might be the gender-based work implications generally from this work revolution that is taking place because of COVID-19?
So that's a really interesting question. I think there are two different possibilities. And one is that people tend to think of their work and their life either as separate, and they're kind of called segmenters. So they want to go to work, keep it at work, and then come home. And a lot of people are integrators. So they want to kind of integrate their work and the family. They'd like to have lunch with their family and then go back to work. And this is particularly beneficial for people who like to integrate. And so that's one aspect that might be particularly helpful to women who often have more of the family care responsibilities. Mm-hmm. Another aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. I interrupted.
Oh, no problem at all. Another aspect is really cutting down on that commute time. I think you mentioned Lindsay, who could go outside in her yard. All of these types of activities that reduce stress women are less likely to take advantage of. So self-care and self-compassion, they're usually doing. They're doing so many roles. And having that commute time reduced may provide them with the opportunity to not only take care of others and do their work, but take care of themselves. And I actually thought of a third one, which is there tends to be in society a big return for people who are working longer and longer hours and sacrificing their time at home. And that's decreasing that, which kind of can level the playing field. So I'm really excited that some of these changes may actually make it easier for women to integrate different parts of their lives and to be able to show organizations the value added to their organization of allowing workers who have work and life issues to be able to integrate them through more flexible work arrangements. So organizations themselves as a whole may really change by seeing the quality of work people are able to do from home.
Right. But that's very individual. To push back a little bit, Michelle, I mean, the integrators, if you're an integrator and you're happy to integrate your life with your work at home back and forth and have that mix, but isn't there a danger? Perhaps this is only for a certain type of person to be on guard. You might have the feeling that you're at work all the time because you associate your the walls that you used to have a refuge in just for family and doing, you know, getting away from work is now associated with work. Is there a caution there for a certain type of person?
There really is. And what I teach negotiation. I've been teaching it for over 15 years. And that's one of the things that I think of negotiation, not just as these big deals, but kind of what you do at home and at work, is that people not only need to create structure for their work day, you know, to get up and get dressed, even though they're at home, but they need to use those skills to say no. They need to be able to figure out where their boundaries are. And instead of saying yes to every request and keeping their email and phone on 24/7, they're going to have to set boundaries and say, you know, from 4 to 7, I'm turning off my phone. This is my family time. And actually, for people who are total introverts, they might have to figure out what those boundaries are. It's very easy for people to make requests at midnight. I get emails from students at midnight. Can you tell me a little more about this assignment? And you have to figure out, do I wait till the morning to answer it, or do I answer it at midnight? And so this to me goes back to kind of the manager's role of kind of really talking with employees, seeing what their schedules are, having an open and honest communication of when are we at work. And this depends on industry and when are we at home. Some industries you have to be available. You might be a doctor on call, but there are a lot of industries where with your work team and with your manager, you can figure out how are we going to make sure that all the hours that need to get covered are covered and everybody has downtime.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to some of the social media responses that we gathered this weekend and Unscientific Poll. If you've just joined us, you've just been listening to Michelle Williams, Daniel Newton joining us from his home, Michelle from her home. I'm at my home. We're also in this inaugural show entirely produced, created in homes rather than in a studio. We are focusing on working from home since so many of us, I was at millions across the country, are now either being encouraged or told you have to work from home because of the COVID virus. So we're talking about the benefits and challenges with two faculty members at the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business, whose research here has, as you can tell, a lot of interesting relevancy for those of us, and I include myself, who are newbies working at home. Let me go back to our social media. We asked people to rank how they're feeling, their experience of working at home now that they've just been doing it relatively recently, just for a few days. This is Vince from Facebook. He gives it a 10, 1 to 10. 1 is miserable. 10 is out of this world great. Vince from Facebook says 10. I'm not sure why I ever need to go back to the office. Karen, on the other hand, gives it a 4. Here's what she writes. My husband and I are both employed in agriculture, which I believe is considered an essential industry. Luckily, we are in jobs which allow us to work from home right now. We also have 2 kids, 10 and 5 years old, here with us. It is hard, writes Karen, trying to work, trying to prevent total brain atrophy for my kids, and trying to maintain some normality at home when all the typical family stuff is ramped up with all of us here. Who knew how much laundry there could be, or how dirty the bathrooms could get so quickly, or how much food is created and consumed? There are moments of fun and joy, for example, planting the garden together or taking care of our small herd of cattle. But overall, it is hard. Karen writing, thank you for that response. Karen and her husband somewhere in Iowa. Tackle that one, Daniel. There's a lot in there to pick apart, isn't there?
Oh, for sure. And I think that it is hard, as I mean, any new adjustment is difficult. And one thing I've seen this kind of meme floating around social media is it may feel like Groundhog Day. And actually, one of the crew members aboard the ISS said that when he came back, when I was chatting with him. He said, up there after a while, it can feel like Groundhog Day. And so maybe there's things that we could do to mix up the routine a little bit. So Scott Kelly, who was an astronaut, had this New York Times editorial where he talked about have a hobby. And I think Karen mentioned that. Or do something different. We're talking about planting the garden. So I know that my daughters are planting seeds to grow some sprouts in the kitchen right now. And so trying to do things that maybe we wouldn't normally do can mix up the routine and potentially provide some joy, right, that we otherwise wouldn't be able to find, because we don't want that monotony of Groundhog Day every day, because there are difficulties. On the other hand, was it Vince that spoke first who said, I love it. I don't think I have to go back to work ever.
Right.
Where I think maybe we'll see a little bit, like Michelle was talking about, that employers will see that they can trust their workers, and that if they give their people some free rein, some latitude to work remotely, that people will step up to the task and not disappoint. And so I think this trial period, it does come with growing pains, but I think there's a lot of positives and a lot of potential that could come from it.
What's interesting to me here too, and you just sort of alluded to it, I think, Daniel, is that, you know, when we go to a workplace, depending on the type of work, we may say, okay, well, I'm at the workplace, therefore I'm working. When that does not always mean one and the same, right? So doesn't this revolution, this huge change in our society, mean that some of us are being reminded, you know, independent of where we are either getting work done or not getting work done.
Yeah, I completely agree. And some of maybe what we did before, I think we as workers, and maybe the managers that Michelle talked about, would see, do you know what? Why in the world were we doing that previously? That doesn't make any sense. And so, like, I think we'll start to see maybe some paring back, where the things that really matter to kind of productivity and efficiency will rise to the top. And it's like, okay, make sure that you do these three critical things, A, B, and C. But the other stuff, this report or this, like, why were we having you do that? I have no idea. And so hopefully those are the things that are going to fall by the wayside. And right, the things that will rise to the top will be the things that matter most.
Right. Right. Michelle, when I think about the typical office manager, let's say they're, you know, a bunch of cubicles, the manager goes around and does one of those typical tours during the day to check in with this or that other employee. So with your research on trust is there. So this just completely changes that the manager doesn't do that anymore, if that manager ever did it. And we really have the manager judging this worker by the output, right? Because
exactly,
they can't check anything else other than output.
And what's kind of interesting is that monitoring actually shows to the employee that you don't quite trust them. So right now, managers are being forced to take a leap of faith, right? You're at home, you have to be at home. I've got to trust that you're going to do what you need to do for this organization. And that big leap of faith and risk, when the employee brings back that high quality work that they're capable of doing, actually makes a big leap in their actual trust, because they said, okay, I had to take this leap, but you've met what I expected. And so that's really one of these powerful ways that trust between employees and managers can spiral upward. Mm-hmm. The thing we want to prevent is when these, what I call trust glitches, happen, things where expectations aren't met for a variety of reasons, that people are able to use what I call more cognitive flexibility, to be able to think, there are a lot of reasons out there why this might have not gone well. Let me talk to this employee. Let's have a conversation. Let's figure out what are the obstacles and what can we work through together. So managers really becoming kind of coaches, kind of let's figure out what, you know, how we can make this work, as opposed to people who are there only to hand out rewards and punishments for a task done, but people to really support that employee.
Michelle Williams and Daniel Newton with us for another 5 minutes on this edition of River to River, entirely done from our homes. I'm at my home. Michelle is at hers, Daniel at his. So this is an inaugural River to River entirely from homes. And we're reflecting the fact that so many of us in the state, in the nation, are now having to work at home. Perhaps we love it. Perhaps we don't. And we've seen that reflected in the social media responses we have. Here's Amanda from Facebook. Without the kiddo being home from school, first of all, I have to preface this by saying we asked for a 1 to 10 rating, 1 miserable, 10 outstanding, great. So Amanda answers that. Without the kiddo being home from school, an 8. I miss people. With him being home from school, 1, nearly impossible. Craig from Facebook, a 2. I really hate it, writes Craig. I would go back tomorrow if they let me, virus or not. Again, the overwhelming number of responses to the 28 responses that we had was overwhelmingly positive, 10 tens there. I wanted to sort of steer the end of this conversation, Michelle and Daniel, to really talk about where this is going. We really have to be futurists, all of us, when we think about work in the future and the quantum leap that we are taking as a society. I mentioned at the outset, what, in private industry, something like 7%, mostly sort of white-collar managers at the upper end of the earnings scale, were afforded the benefits of that flexible working, being able to work from home. Now, when that next survey for 2020 comes out, it will be much more, many more in our population working from home. Daniel, let me start off with you. This is really trippy, if I can use that word, to try to imagine where this is going, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I would hope that there is this increased flexibility and latitude where organizations and managers see that they can trust their people, like Michelle talked about, that they that autonomy can be very motivating to people and that people perform better under those conditions. And I also think in addition to maybe some increased comfort with these types of arrangements, there's also some innovations, right? That maybe some ways that we've done things in the past, we may not continue to do those things. That I mean, Michelle and I, as educators, I mean, most of our classes are in person, but maybe there's an increase in online education where we can reach a broader audience, and there could be benefits to that. Or maybe instead of when you're sick and going into the doctor's office and infecting other people, maybe there could be these drive-throughs that we're seeing now. That there's, I think, an opportunity for innovation, and hopefully some new things that are coming down the pipeline that will kind of allow for new work arrangements that kind of take into account the entire person and are able to kind of be even more effective and personalized for individuals.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, I'm trying to imagine us perhaps in 5 years listening back to this conversation and going, wow, we didn't get it in some ways. I don't know if you have that feeling, but I always try to put myself in the future and then listen to myself now and imagine, well, what do you think we'll think of this conversation as an indication of the change our culture is just now starting?
So I think that we're going to have two aspects. I think we're going to have the part that Daniel said about a lot of work is going to be done differently and more creatively, and that we're going to learn a lot from organizations like Zirtual that have a whole workforce who's working at home and helping other individuals. But I think we may be at this point still underestimating the power of that personal touch of being, and by that I mean just face-to-face contact, and how the virtual never catch up with the same ability to read nonverbals. And so there's always going to be a place for work relationships that are conducted in person, and being able, I think what we can't predict is what form that's going to take and how that's going to be narrowed and different.
Okay. Well, we've run out of time here, and I want to thank you both very much for joining us. Michelle Williams, Assistant Professor of Management and Entrepreneurship at the University of Iowa Tippie College of Business, also the John L. McLaught Fellow. Is that right, McLaught?
That's right.
Fellow in Entrepreneurship there. Daniel Newton, Assistant Professor of Management and Entrepreneurship, a colleague there of Michelle at the University of Iowa. Daniel and Michelle, thank you so much for joining us. It's been insightful and historic, I have to say.
Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Want to have you join us tomorrow on the program. Why do some people age better than others? Tomorrow on my program, my guest is the renowned neuroscientist Daniel Levitin. His new book, Successful Aging, offers insights on getting older. It also debunks myths about memory, depression, and chronic pain. Neuroscientist Daniel Levitin tomorrow on the program. River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin Harrop, and Matt Alvarez. Catherine Perkins is our executive producer. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thank you for joining me and my home.